Welcome back, y'all, for another episode of This Is Africa. Grand episode one for a fresh new season. All right, coming back again, y'all. Happy to be here. I think we can all agree our first season was really fun. We had a blast just growing and learning and learning along with the world around us. We hope to continue to learn and move in the right direction that will fit our style of play better. We hope to, I guess, build a even bigger conversation with you guys, the listeners, so we can build more participation and get more of you guys' input and all those cool things. We just look forward to that and better things to come. This season, some of our goals are focusing on themes like unity, progress, youth of Africa, and some regional highlighting. But before we get into that today, my name is Adama. Welcome back. My name is Adama.
How you doing, everybody? My name is Tamba. I'm very excited for season two. Mm-hmm. You know, some of my goals personally, you know, ever since I was a kid, I had this idea of, you know, the African utopia. You know, Africa being one, Africa being together. Today or throughout the season, that's what my echo is going to be. I want to, bring conversation forward that will bring us towards our utopia. You know, I know last season, you know, we were kind of all over the place in terms of our topics, but it was just, you know, the introduction to Africa. This time we're going to be a little more direct, diving into it a little more, being a little more specific. And hopefully you guys enjoy, you know.
For real, though.
Hello, peoples. All right. This is Lord. Definitely excited to be with you guys again. Haven't seen Ya in a very long time in terms of doing this.
I mean, you never see them, honestly.
I'm talking about Ya 3. I'm not talking about the audience.
I'm happy to see you, too. I'm happy to see you, too.
You know, yeah, I haven't got to talk like this in a very long time, so it's like, you know, just... I'm just here to just spar with ideas and just, you know, just push conversation forward and just, you know, just be here and just like actually just get to enjoy what we're doing together. So that's what I'm happy about.
Okay. Yeah, true.
Welcome back. This is Amiri, you know, glad to be back in form with the podcast and enjoy conversations about bringing awareness to the youth, people within our generation to help bridge a gap. So older generation can understand us and the younger generation can understand us and kind of fill in that gap of perspective, you know. So us starting season two, you know, we hope to dive deep into a lot of interesting topics and, you know, bring awareness and involve the audience into our topics and conversation. So glad to be back.
For sure, for sure. All great, beautiful things. I'm glad to be back with you guys as well, to Lord's point. Luckily, you know, speaking about some of those themes I highlighted, our topic for today has a lot going on. And again, somehow we've, Africa and its people in the diaspora, et cetera, we found ourselves in the middle again, I guess, picking sides and attempting to protect our fields while attempting to capitalize on some of the opportunities that are in front of us. And like I said, the topic today covers some of our lovely themes and includes all four of them. And I guess to sum it up, and you'll even see like the title of today's episode, you know, like someone always seems to always be receiving the shorter end of the stick. And it's weird in this global chess game that we're playing. That will last as long as people exist on this world. But today we'll try to focus in on a conversation about how the events going on in Ukraine have been impacting Africa, its people, and the state of affairs there. And there are a ton of connections between Ukraine, Russia, and Africa, just to get like a little bit in there, from the amount of people living in Ukraine to the increase in need of the use of natural gas, new allegiances, and expansion of the Trans-Saharan gas pipeline. There are even positive opportunities surfacing with heavy sanctions falling on Russia, which we'll touch on with people like Aloke Dangote and, you know, kind of things like that. So we'll definitely be focusing heavy on Ukraine and its impacts. But to start, I guess, TK, what's the first thing that comes to mind when I bring up Ukraine, when I bring up all these ties and little things like natural gas, fertilizer, people supporting opportunities, stuff like that? How you feeling?
The first thing that comes to mind is just the failure of the diplomacy in the international realm, right?
Always critical.
Yeah, the fact that, you know, this war is going on doesn't make sense. You know, there's something like this, and I guess 2022 should technically not be happening. You know?
Just generally, I mean.
Generally, it should not be happening. A war of another country challenging another country's sovereignty just because they have a bigger power and they're, you know, they're able to take it over, it should not happen. These are the things, you know, as a global community we fought for and we're fighting against, for things of this nature not to happen. With that being said, we're not going to bore our listener today about, you know.
Wait, hold up. You're not going to ask us what we think about the whole situation?
No, hold on.
I said, what's the first thing that comes to TK's brain? Oh, okay. That means you're next.
He's like, don't want to bore anybody.
I got a lot to say.
I want
to
bore y'all too.
No, I'm saying I don't want to bore them in what they're seeing in the news, you know. Maybe you should have waited till I finish, you know, about, you know, what's going on in Ukraine and Russia specifically, because I'm sure they hear about that all the time. It's getting to the point where it's becoming old news, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Our podcast is called This Is Africa, so we're going to focus specifically on how it's affecting the African continent. And you brought up some of the things we're going to talk about. There are in every, you know, negative thing, there are positives, little positives that we could pick out. So those are some of those things that the opportunities the African continent may be seeing with this. But before I get into it, I'm going to let Lord, you know, speak about, give us a little spiel since you were so eager to cut me off.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't so eager. I just thought you just said boring. I was like, boring. I'm like, boy, y'all too. Nah, but first things first, what comes to my mind is that, like, number one, I didn't know there were a lot of African youth in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of caught me off guard. Even before that, I should have seen this coming because, like, and I'll get into it later, that, like, one of my cousins, when she was going to college or university in some places, she said she was studying abroad, and I'm like, where? She said Ukraine. I'm like, that is, like, the most, like, how do you call it? Well, it sounded odd to me.
Odds,
I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, like, Ukraine. I'm like, what's, what? Kids, like, because most people go to either the States or.
Yeah, a lot of Africans, you know, don't go to.
You know, what do you call it? London or, you know, France or something like that, but. To hear Ukraine, that kind of caught me off guard. I'm like, that's interesting. But come to find out, with this whole conflict just pop up, a lot of African people, African students, go to school in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like,
I know the reason why.
That was very interesting to me. I'm not even gonna lie to you. So
definitely,
like,
be able to touch on how they're treating, like, them there.
Oh well, that was something very interesting to me when, you know, the whole war broke out. I was like,
Right,
that's my thoughts.
Yeah, I feel like a reason why a lot of African students pick Ukraine too, because when I was doing my research and stuff too, they say that, like, Ukraine specializes in, like, in a lot of engineering, medical courses and stuff, and also the living expenses is very cheap. You know, it doesn't cost that much to live in Ukraine, and they offer a lot of amenities for a very low price for, like, a lot of international students around the world. So I would say a lot of Indians, a lot of Africans, a lot of Middle Easterns study in Ukraine too, you know. But yeah, it's unfortunate that, like, you have to travel to a country you want to study, and then a war break out, and then you gotta face discrimination. Crazy. Yeah,
that's definitely gonna be very interesting to talk about.
You know, so.
Yeah, nah. I mean, I guess, like, now that we kind of get the gist of things. Even before we started, I kind of explained, like, you know, me, probably one of my biggest problems is the way that people have been treated as a result of this situation, where a problem has started because people think another group of people are a certain way. And within that struggle, people still can't help but think people are, well, other groups of people are less than them and or different and don't deserve to be treated the same way within all the problems. But I guess TK went first, and I think where he started would be a good place to, like, kind of tap into it. You spoke about how, like, you know, being critical to how governments are handling this. To Lord's point, whether it's how people are being moved or handled, like, not knowing how many people are there, I guess. So to throw out some, like, a quick little numbers that we can tap into is that there are about 8,000 Moroccans living in Ukraine, 4,000 Nigerians, all of which, those are the numbers for students studying there. And it seems as though in a lot of cases, we don't even know that they're there. And in a lot of cases, we're hearing that people are being treated differently. They're not being allowed to evacuate. They're not being allowed to leave on the same vehicles of transportation that other people who are from there are leaving, because they may be people who are trying to escape and then taint this new land that they're going to, whatever that might be. So I guess first question is, how do we feel, how do we feel about how governments are treating and how governments are handling the movement of their people across the situation?
African government or government?
African government specifically.
Oh,
I mean, because those are the people that are responsible for their own people.
Well, I feel like it's an unfortunate situation because, like, for us African people, or even like any person, people in the diaspora that's studying, like, especially in a European country, like, as a say an African nation or say a Caribbean nation or any nation in the diaspora, you should be, our country should be valuing those students, you know, that's studying abroad.
Our future.
Yeah, they are our future, you know. So they're willing to obtain knowledge abroad to come back to our countries and invest in our countries and educate the youth or whatever, teaching schools, whatever, you know. But for them to not act efficiently and on time to a crisis like this where their students have to evacuate on time because active war is going on, it's kind of like an unfortunate situation. It's kind of like, well, damn, our countries don't value us, you know, like, we are educating abroad and, like, we bring in resources and knowledge back to our country. So, like, why is there and a delay in our process to be safe? You know, so.
Yeah, for sure. I just to even, like, reemphasize, like, the reason why I feel like we should start here is only because we're going to get into, like, obviously, like, the economic impact, some of the agricultural stuff and all those different things. And I feel like it starts with, like, the reason why it's important is because all those things benefit our people. And there are our people there who are educating themselves so they can come back and then provide more of the things that we need and stuff like that. So I feel like maybe it might be a good importance to talk about how governments are handling their people, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Of course, whenever we speak about the African government, it's always a multi-layer issue. Because we have to understand that, you know, they are facing a lot. The job is not easy at all. It's not an easy job. And
you might butter me up.
Also, when you speak about the diaspora, because, you know, the governments, as you may know, you hear this all the time, dealing with corruption, we're dealing with poverty, we're dealing with infrastructure issues, we're dealing with a lot of things. We're dealing with foreign powers who impose their will on us all the time, you know. So a lot of those things happen. And also when we speak about the diaspora, it's also like a multi-layered issue because, you know, like you guys are assuming that, you know, people leave their countries, you know, to go study in the diaspora to come back. The return rate of Africans who go study in the diaspora and come back is actually pretty low if you look at the numbers. But at the same time, when a war of this magnitude breaks out and there's multiple reports of, you know, Africans, people that look like me and you, you know, and also Indians as well, being turned away at borders because of their ethnicity or skin color, to be blunt, is disgusting. You know, it's disgusting. The other day, I saw this video of this guy, Spanish or Spaniard MP speaking about Ukrainian refugees, you know, and thoughts and prayers to the people in Ukraine. They're going through a tough time.
For sure.
And this is their country being affected, and I see that. But in the time of crisis where the Africans that are in Ukraine are going through the same issues, they're fleeing just like the Ukrainian people, I feel like they should be treated the same once if they have the opportunity to escape at the same time. But this Spanish MP spoke about the Ukrainians who are the real refugees, who are the ones that we should accept in their countries, you know, extending borders, women, they should be the priority. While we've had African refugees for decades, you know, being beaten like animals at the border, being turned away, you know. We all heard the story of Francis Ngannou, which is a UFC fighter, who has such a presence in the world now, being in the UFC, having a platform. When he shared his story on the Joe Rogan podcast, he said that he had to try multiple times to cross the border seeking asylum. These are asylum seekers. He went through and they took him back and brought him to the desert, leaving him to die.
Yes.
You know, and that's kind of, for the people to understand, that's kind of, it didn't get to that extent with the with the Africans at the Polish border being turned away. Did not get to that extent.
But they're in the cold.
But they're left in the cold. They're left at war. They're left to die. They're basically being left to go to war. They've even been asked to take arms to go to war, mm-hmm. fight for Ukraine. Mm-hmm. You know, which if some of them
expected to,
yeah, they were expected. If some of them want to do that to help the Ukrainian people, sure, do that. But most of these people, like you said, came here to study.
Yeah,
you know, they came here to Ukrainian people accepted them to study, and they're there to study. You know, now in terms of the government, you know, we saw the Jamaican government when this, which I applaud them. Jamaica's doing amazing on a world stage at this time. When it was time to get their people in return, they sent a plane. Mm-hmm. You know, Africans were being turned away. We haven't, like I said, our governments are dealing with a lot, you know, but we didn't hear anything from them for a while. It took a social media movement, a grassroots movement, for governments to finally take action. And there were, I'm never going to say they were 2 months late or 3 months late, but it did come in I guess to kind of make this funny, African fashion, we're always late to the party. So, you know, the planes came late to the party. Now, they tried their best. I'm not denying that, but a lot of people were suffering. Yeah. You know, you know when you're studying abroad, maybe sometimes you don't have a job. Mm-hmm. Maybe the money you have is all you have. If your apartment you put your money on, you getting up and you're leaving, you know, these are extraordinary times as well. If you're looking for refuge in another country and you're being turned away, and now you're asking your government to help you and they don't do anything, that is kind of, how does that make you feel? Does that make you want to go back to your country?
No. Yeah.
You know, the country that you love so much that you quote unquote left to maybe come and help. Mm-hmm. You know, although our governments are dealing with a lot, still, I feel that
it all starts with our people.
You know, Lord actually has a story. You should share a story.
Story time?
Yeah, you should share a story.
Story time with
Lord.
It kind
of segues perfectly into.
I wanted to piggyback away.
You can start.
Go ahead.
Nah, then I'll talk too long. I'll just go into story time right now and stuff. But as I said previously, that like one of my cousins was she's studying in, well, not right now, but in Ukraine. So around the time when Russia got to the Ukrainian border and, like, you know, we didn't know whether it was going to invade or not, I reached out to her brother. I'm close to her brother, and I reached out to him on Instagram. I'm like, hey, like, you know, I'm hearing what's going on. And I think he didn't even know what was going on, too, low-key. So I reached out to him, and I said, hey, is, you know, your sister okay? Like, I'm hearing the whole thing with this Russia situation, yada, yada, yada. Is she good? He told me she's good. Because at that time, and now we're also seeing it, that the Ukrainians did not think that Russia was actually going to invade. Like, there was some sort of solace that was going on there, where it's like, you know, they're just trying to scare us type thing, but, like, it's not really going to happen. Because later on, even my mom asked her, like, why didn't you leave when this whole thing was happening? But she also said it, that, like, they really didn't think that Russia was actually going to go through with it.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's crazy. Every genocide didn't think that, you know.
Then they
not
did.
This is a genocide, but yeah.
And now, you know, and then the first thing which my mom and I were thinking about is, like, you know, thinking about her, like, yo, like, I don't want to put her name out there, but is she okay and stuff? So this is where my mom got her contact, you know, shout out to WhatsApp. So
Facebook.
Not Meta. A sponsor.
Meta now. Yeah. But we reached out to her. My mom reached out to her, calling her through a WhatsApp. And honestly, communication with her was really tough because connection was very spotty. Like, we could hear her, but, like, you know, in and out. It's also the time difference too. So first things that, like, okay, so she took the bus to go to a neighboring village called Uzgrud.
I have a question just to give people a bit of an idea. Did she speak the language?
No. She spoke English. But also Ukrainians speak English too.
Okay. Whoever you need to speak to speaks English.
Whoever she needs to speak to speak English. I don't know whether all Ukrainians speak English, but there's a good majority of people that speak English in Ukraine.
So she didn't have any trouble communicating with the Ukrainian people?
No, not that I know of. No.
Okay.
Not that I know of.
That's cool.
But so she went there to take another bus. So the first place that she was heading to was Poland, just like everybody else. It was going to Poland. But then she heard that, like, you know, there was what we're just talking about, like, there's a problem going on in the Poland border.
Yeah.
So she decided to go a little bit south into Slovenia. So again, we was very, very worried about her in terms of, you know, her safety. Mm-hmm. She was also scared for her safety too, as well, in terms of, like, you know, the bus and, like, you know, making sure she got anything. So then, shout out to also all the non-state actors in this whole situation, like, you know, churches, as you call it, NGOs and everything like that. Because when this happened, so shout out to my church, Pentecost. they put out something over there that, like, so Pentecost is worldwide, and they put on the WhatsApp group chat that, like, hey, like, we have people in Czech Republic, in Slovenia, in Poland, blah, blah, blah. If you want to actually reach out to them in order to, like, if you know a student, a Ghanaian student who's studying in there and they need our help, like, contact these people.
Yeah.
So my mom contacted a person in, I don't know what his, like, church role is, but in Czech Republic. So my mom reached out to him and told him about the whole situation. So she made she told him, and basically he said that, like, I know somebody in Slovenia. So if she gets to Slovenia, I could get somebody to come pick her up and bring her to Prague. So my mom communicated that with her. Again, very spotty connection. We didn't know if it was going to get her or not. To tell her that, like, okay, like, when you go to Slovenia, somebody's going to be there. And we also gave her contact to the guy too as well. So she got to the Slovenian border.
Give us, like, a timeline. How long did it take her? Because it seems like it's all the same day. But did
this took about, like, a week and a half.
A week, okay.
Yeah,
did
a
she,
week.
Did
a
she
week,
have food?
A week, week and a half. Yeah. No, so she didn't eat for a couple of days.
Didn't eat for a couple of days. Yeah. And what about her clothes and things of that nature, like her belongings?
She did have her paperwork, thank God. In terms of clothing and everything like that, I really don't know, but I'm sure, like, she was able to change and stuff. Maybe, like, I don't know about the whole shower. I personally didn't really think about that. I was just thinking about, like, you know, just get out the country.
Yeah, of course, get into safe people. Mm-hmm. Food
you
is important.
Get out the country, you know? With your breath stinking, mm-hmm. It's all good. You're alive. Like, I really think. So she got to Slovenia, and the person met her, not the one who we called, but the connect that the guy in Prague had in Slovenia, got her at the Slovenian border and bought her a train ticket to go all the way to Prague. When she got to Prague, she got to stay in a hotel, and she was safe. Hallelujah to that. Thank God for that. But we was also concerned about other people, let's say, who did not have somebody in the United States to facilitate the rescue. Because her parents was in Ghana and were scared out of their mind. Mom mm-hmm. crying, you know, dad being concerned.
Of course, news reports go crazy.
And, you know, just having us over there to, like, really facilitate the whole quote-unquote rescue mission. I'm like, yo, mom, like, you really, like... did a whole legit rescue mission.
What was it? International smuggler at this point.
So to facilitate that was really, really, like, and I looked at, like, because again, my mom did the whole, like, work in terms of, like, making sure that she was safe. But then it dawned on me that, like, one, what if somebody did not have the resources in terms of, like, having somebody in the States powerful enough to, like, help her out? For and sure. Two, in terms of, like, mm-hmm. that's what it dawned on us, and what we're talking about right now is, like, what are the African governments doing? Because if it only takes, like, one person, with the limited resources that we have, we use a WhatsApp to communicate,
mm-hmm.
to see where she's had geolocation-wise and, like, you know, through the help of the church and everything to get her into, you know, to safety. I'm like, you're a whole national government. You have way more resources.
You guys spend any money from your side?
Yeah, did you have to
pay
financial?
We didn't have to pay anything. We just, like, gave her money just for, like, tickets and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because also, too, the thing was hard. It was hard to give to send money to us because it was through Western Union. But Western Union and Ukraine ain't existing at the moment because they're in a whole war. So it's more so, like, when she got to Slovenia, that's when we were able to give her money.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's so tough. Whatever little that she has is, like, what she had to, like, you know. What she had to use. But we did give her money in terms of also, like, making sure that, like, when she got to Prague, she has the money to stay in where she needs to stay at. But that's where it comes to the question in the conversation that we're having right now is, more so of you're a national government. You have way more resources than my mom and I in terms of like using WhatsApp and stuff. Sure. Like you guys have access to plane. You guys have access to other embassies in neighboring countries. What are y'all doing? Let's talk about it right now.
I hope they're working.
What were y'all doing? Because why did it have to take so long? Why do you have to take a grassroots level? Why do you have to take a lot of non-state actors for you to get it that like, oh, our people are in danger. Like, let's go help them out and get them out of danger. Because at the end of the day, if you want the international states to respect you, you got to respect yourself and your own people.
For sure, for sure.
At the end of the day, we ride for hours. You feel me?
Speaking about riding for people, because we can stay on this topic just maybe like a couple more minutes, because the next topic will probably like, the next two, are, we can build them into one thing. But because I think about something we spoke about earlier, even when we speak about just like allegiances and who in the world are these African countries supporting, whether it's Russia, Ukraine, and those type of things.
Oh, I know Ghana's
And now I'm wondering, like, does the slow pace in the recovery of our people, for lack of a better way to say it, have anything to do with African countries supporting Russia and whether or not we think that's a case?
I mean, supporting Russia or not, you still got to save somebody from the Ukraine.
You should still be able to get your people, right? That's what I'm assuming.
Like, we're not beefing with Russia, but at the end of the day, like, it's still affecting our people. So whether you're against it or how'd you call it, or for it, at the end of the day, your people are still dying.
For sure.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So at the end of the day, you have a civic duty to get them out of danger. Because guess what? If the United States... of United States citizens were trapped somewhere in a war-torn country, they are... Getting them out so quick.
Fine line. Yeah, fine line. I've read reports that the family doesn't want, like, the name and the person to kind of be out there, so I won't say it, you know what I'm saying, just in case we blow up or something like that.
WNBA superstar.
Yes, there is a basketball star that's over there that isn't necessarily being treated the way that I would assume, because I felt the same way you felt. And I do not feel like that is being done to that person, whether it's a racial thing
stakes,
or whatever it might
but the
be.
The stakes
but.
Is different, though.
And she's in Russia, and there's no communication. There's no diplomatic ties right now between the U.S. and Russia.
The stakes are different now because, and I don't want to deviate too much of it, but remember when ASAP Rocky got into jail?
Yeah, in Sweden.
Yeah. And how, like, there was literally using the power of Trump to get him out.
Or LaMelo Ball, not LaMelo, LiAngelo Ball in China.
It was a lot of social platform like uproar from us, and, like people like that who were kind of pushing Trump,
To get him out. Mm-hmm. But the same thing, like, but just that, like, the stakes are different and more so of like, since we're kind of in a quote-unquote proxy war, with Russia, the stakes is a lot different in terms of like,
I want to antagonize.
And again, even the WNBA was saying that, like, you know, we have to take this very, very delicately because we don't want it to get to a point where it's like the user as a pawn.
As a pawn,
like,
or something like that, yeah.
So it just gets into a whole bunch of things. But getting back to topic right now, in terms of what the government were doing or how slow they were able to act, that's my question to y'all is that, like, again, if we really value ourselves or value, like, you know, our people and stuff, why were we so slow to act? Like, yeah, we acted eventually, but as you were saying, is it because of Russian ties that we have with certain countries? Because at the end of the day, like, I don't know whether you spoke on it on TK, Tamba, in terms of, like, the UN votes and what happened. Did you talk about that?
No, I didn't talk about that yet, but...
Okay, so I don't want to jump the gun with that. But I mean, that's the question where I'm asking is more so of like, oh, do we not say anything because, you know, we buddy-buddy with Russia? Or even though we buddy-buddy with Russia, we also have to know that, like, our people comes first before anything else. So,
yeah, I mean,
that's my question to you.
I think maybe that might have played a factor into it, the relationship between Russia and African nations. But in terms of getting people... from Ukraine, I really hope not. I really hope not. But to give people a better understanding of the Russian, you know, AU relation or just African continent relation, it's kind of a bit of a ripple effect. We can call it that, a real ripple effect. You know, I'll give you maybe a quick history. The Russian, during the 60s, when the African nations were getting their independence, the Russian government was a big part in terms of funding those liberation wars, funding those liberation movements. And a lot of African countries you know, disassociated themselves from the West at that point, which were the colonizers, and sided with the Soviet Union at the time. So the ties between
and the Cold War was happening.
And the Cold War was happening as well. So Russia needed to, you know, gain international support worldwide, and Africa was a great, I guess, like Adamo was saying, chess game. It was a great pawns to play with. And so there's a big connection between Russia and the African continent, you know. And also our people, you know, I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with the protests that go on in African countries recently. You always see them, you know, well, see us bashing the West. We bash the West.
Yeah, no trust.
And we always say, oh, Russia, we want Russia, we want Russia, because, you know, the Russian government kind of does whatever they want. They don't mind if the regime type that's going on in the country, they will fund it any way they can in order to gain international support. So which brings me to what Lord was saying about the UN votes. During the votes at the UN to condemn Russia for the action, which the majority of the General Assembly at the United Nations, which is the 195 or 94 countries that get to vote, or who are member states of or members of the United Nations, voted to condemn Russia. But for some reason, the African continent kind of stuck out. 17 African countries abstained. 28 voted in favor, that number. One voted against. And 8 African countries were just not in the room.
Who was that one?
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it. We're not going to take these countries. You know, we're not going to highlight them. But just one voted. They probably have deep ties with Russia. I know my country definitely has ties with Russia, and my country did abstain, which is Mali. And they abstained because of the military role Russia is playing over there. You know, because they like I said, this is where the opportunity comes in. Some of these countries see this as an opportunity to get closer to Russia. You know, Russia has this paramilitary group. Some people refer to them as a mercenary group, but Wagner Corporation, or the Wagner Group, where they send military. They actually are in the Central African Republic, they're in Libya, they're in Mozambique, and they're in Mali. They have operations there, and they're there to basically fight against terrorism. But some people see them as pawns who do operations on the behalf of the Kremlin. So, yeah. Of course, my country, if you look at it, they're going to abstain. And just naturally, when issues like this rise at the UN, African countries always either abstain or they side with Russia due to the historical ties they have with Russia. You know, recently, a lot of West African countries have not been getting along with the West, and they're moving more east towards Russia. Now, there are some African countries, which, of course, is not highlighted, that have spoken out against Russia, such as Ghana. You know, the president of Ghana came out and spoke out firmly against it. But some of them didn't. So, I mean, before I move on to, you know, the opportunities, but these are some of the reasons why, I guess, in diplomacy and geopolitically, you know, it might be hard for some of these African countries to make the decisions to go against Russia, because they're so deeply rooted within Russia. Their ties are so rooted, and they need Russia while the West is maybe not present.
But here's the thing, though, like, it's one thing to, like, you know, in terms of, like, the votes or having, like, Russian ties and, like, you know, in terms of, like, Russian international diplomacy and stuff. But it's a whole different ballgame when your people are literally caught in a war in a different country outside than Russia. Like, I really don't care if you vote against or you vote in favor. Your people were suffering and dying being mistreated. That is no excuse for you not to go rescue them.
Yeah, of course.
I really don't get it.
That's like what I was trying to say. I don't think that had a factor in why they didn't act. I think, like I said, we're always late to the party. We just acted. Our governments are going through a lot. Now, that doesn't make any excuse, because the Jamaican government was there right away.
Indian government.
They actually acted preemptively. Like, they were there before the issue even got worse. So, I don't know. Yeah. That's a tough argument to make.
Yeah.
But I don't think it had something to do with it. It's kind of
Yeah, so do you guys think feel like maybe like a lot of African nations feel like it wasn't a critical issue at that point in time? They're thinking that maybe, oh, our students is abroad studying, so let those governments deal with our students rather than us actually sending planes over to pick up our students. And
I hope
back.
Not.
To a degree. I guess, actually, that's really good. For a second, I was about to be like, but that's a great little thing because it kind of hops into like kind of what I was thinking about per se. Because when I'm looking at some of the things that, for example, Tanzania has said, one of the quotes from their government directly was, when hearing about the people that were there in Ukraine, they said, the government wants you to remain calm. During this time, we are closely following on your safety with Ukrainian authorities.
What does that mean?
That is what they said.
But what
and
does
then
that
following,
mean?
Following that, and this is where I feel like it kind of touches in, because it's like, following that, Tanzania's president came out and said, even though we notice the tensions that are going on in Ukraine, it's helping generate growing interest in the country's national gas reserves. And because of it, they're experiencing more wealth, they're gaining more money because of the tension going on there. So they're putting out messages that talk about how this situation is helping them, and then they're also putting out messages to their people telling them to remain calm. But we're watching.
My thing about that situation is that
it's insane.
Yeah, my thing about that is like, so what if somebody die now in the midst of this war? Like somebody from an African nation. What if they like actually are a casualty due to the magnitude of the war?
I feel like there are.
I mean, there probably were. But
I feel like there were. Probably I didn't see on the global stage or like in the news media or something.
Yeah,
like
I don't want to. I didn't see any reports of it, so I don't want to speculate. But Emery, that's a great question. But I want to speak about what Adama said first before I answer Emery's question. That's an opportunity that I was talking about. You know, in every negative, there has to be a positive. And these are the opportunities the Tanzanian government was looking at, with now European countries looking to diversify their natural gas suppliers. Tanzania has a lot of it. Senegal has a lot of it.
Yeah.
You know, so why not, you know, now that Russia has basically an embargo on them, they can't get their oil out anymore. Why these African countries, it's their time to try to tap into that market, trying to, you know, work with these European countries to benefit us, you know, of course, because, you know, the deals in Africa are usually a bit
shady.
I didn't want to say that, but sure, shaky.
Yeah, I mean, even like just really quickly throw something onto what you're saying, like, even something as useful as the element palladium. I don't know if anybody who listeners know what that is. Even I didn't necessarily know what it was. But it's a really important chemical element that they use in making cars. Mm-hmm. And South Africa is the world's second greatest producer of it after Russia. Mm. And because of all the sanctions that are happening in Russia, they're now a player for the first, producer of it.
Time.
It's an opportunity. Yeah. It's another chance for them to kind of just and make this money. Like, and even to Senegal's point, just to give a little number out there, it was around 40 trillion cubic feet of oil was found. What? With a trillion or billion. But yeah, between 2014 and 17. And now they have an opportunity to make tons of monies off of that. You know what I mean? So it's...
That'll be big for the African continent.
So. Yeah, I mean, the opportunities are there, man.
Even before with the commodities, you know, there's a commodity chaos going on, and the price of wheat, and you know, we eat cereal a lot. Wheat and
a lot of bread.
Grains,
bread is very important to our
fertilizer.
Culture.
Rice.
A lot of so 30% of actually the global wheat export that goes to Africa is from Russia, and 15% of the corn exports are from Ukraine. Now that those are being we can't get them anymore, for lack of a better word. We just can't get them. This is going to impact our populations greatly, greatly. And now, where does this put us? Because, you know, the African soil is very, you need fertilizer in order to grow, because we have very dry soil. And with the lack of access to soil fertilizer at this time from Russia and Ukraine and the European continent in general, what do we do? I don't know if you guys heard Adama said at the beginning, Don Quixote actually took an initiative and started his own fertilizer, and now he's going to start supplying. That's also an opportunity for the African market to, now granted, he's a billionaire, and of course, but he's doing something. He's filling a void that we need, and that's an African man who lived in Africa, who knows the realities. I'd rather him sell us soil than, you know, us getting it from Europe, you know?
Because we could be on the verge of a global food crisis.
It's possible.
And that's
possible.
Just him being aware and trying to, you know, be ahead of that game.
It's very possible. Yeah. And even in terms of, you know, West Africa, my country has an embargo on them, you know, by the West, the ECOWAS at this time. There's a bunch of coups in Africa. COVID hasn't been easy. Ghana is going through an economic crisis as well. But, you know, let's be fair, the world is going through an economic crisis.
Just go into inflation, yo. I have my sentiment against that.
It stems from COVID, and this issue that's happening in Ukraine, like we said, we always get the short end of the stick. Not that I'm demeaning or even trying to belittle what's going on to the Ukrainian people. We're getting the short end of the stick at the same time. It is affecting us as much or to a great amount. So I don't know. I think the issue is just stupid that it's going on, and it's sad that it's affecting us this much. Our populations are feeling this much with everything going on.
Yeah, but for, I would say on the positive side, it's kind of like an eye-opener for a lot of African nations. Any country within the diaspora to open up their eyes now and kind of more invest into their universities. So African students don't have to travel outside of the continent to study in universities in Europe or elsewhere. You can actually come, migrate, and just study at our universities within the continent. You know, so the knowledge is being recirculated within the continent, diaspora, etc. But this is an opportunity for, like you said, Dangote, out of African leaders to capitalize on, you know, because
yeah, for sure, and yeah, filling those voids.
I mean, I'm glad y'all looking at the positive because I don't see no positive in this. Not positive, but it's more so of like the positive is only positive if you do it the right way, because you can have these opportunities at your disposal, but if you don't use it in the right way, that opportunity can work against you.
We just don't like these African countries.
No, because as Tamba said, like, if you're not making the proper deals, because right now you have bargaining power, in order for that opportunity to work in your favor, yeah, you can capitalize on the opportunity in terms of now we're selling to these countries, but then it's like, okay, how much money are we making of it, and how much are we using that money to reinvest in our own people and our own countries in order for us to elevate? Because if we're not doing any of that, that opportunity is not an opportunity. It's a wasted opportunity. So, again, in terms of, like, looking at a positive note, I don't want to be cynical, but the only way this is actually going to have a positive outcome is if we do it the right way. Because we could do the right thing the wrong way and not work out for us. So my concern is, and hopefully, as you guys said, like, as Tamba noted, hopefully, let's say people like Dangote are doing it the right way, so that we could actually reap the true benefits of it and not just like, oh, we have this opportunity, we took advantage of it. Yay. No. Like, how well did we take advantage of this opportunity?
I mean, but the thing is, the opportunity is there. We can't deny that. The opportunity is there.
It is.
And it's there to be taken advantage of. You know, with all the things, all the negative that's going on, this is a positive that we as a continent can capitalize on.
I feel like what I think about now is like how much we're expecting our governments to juggle.
They're a government, man.
Juggle.
They're a government.
I mean, wait, elaborate that. What do you mean juggle?
These things, because what I feel is that a lot of the things that we're discussing, it's not necessarily as one, two, you know, this can be handled this way. It's like we kind of have to do this first and do this first, because everything feels like a time thing. Everything feels like there's a time limit on something. Mm. Like, Russia will not be invading Ukraine till the day we die. You know what I'm saying? Like, it'll end at one point. And then what do we prioritize during that time? You know what I'm saying? Like, because when I think about all the opportunities that are in front of us, can we, you know, we're not behind the scenes, and maybe one of us can maybe speak to it more, but can we sit down and try to diplomatically arrange all these things and try to take advantage of these markets that are opening up and all these different things while still prioritizing stuff like taking our people out, human rights stuff, and all the other social parts of the issue. And I just feel like there's 'cause when I read, like, can I be mad at Tanzania for jumping on this opportunity, being the second producer of this particular natural gas, and then trying to build a relationship with this country and trying to spend and sell as much of it as possible, and then be mad that they're putting out reports that they're, you know, telling people to remain calm. Yeah, and that we're watching. Because now they're not doing something. They're trying to play a game. And maybe in their head, it's like, okay, I have to do this first. But don't worry, guys. Be calm. Be patient. You know, maybe it's not clear, but it's like, be calm, be patient, allow me to work on this till I get to this.
Man, nation building is complicated.
Because being government is not easy. And we talk about it all the time. Last season, this season, whatever. Like, we speak about it like, oh, we expect you to do this. We expect you to do that. And this, that, and that. But to give them a little bit of, everything is a process. In any successful government, it's never like they're tackling thousands of issues at the same time.
I understand that. But that's why we have different divisions in the government that takes care of specific things that need to get done. So for example, like, you have the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, you have the Ministry of Agriculture. Like, they're all embodied into the government.
But their power is spread out, though. Like, it's not like you can have as much power as I have, because sometimes the power you have may overlap on mine, which makes my job ineffective.
No, power is spread out, but more so about effectiveness. So for example, like, yes, you can capitalize on the economic advantages that's being brought to you, and also make sure that your people are also safe too as well. It's just more so about how are the agencies in that government operating, and how effective are they operating? Because they're part of the government. But at the end of the day, it's more so of like, it's not the entire, and again, this is on a case-by-case basis in terms of countries, how effective their government is, and how effective their agencies are in that government. Because at the end of the day, each government has a specific goal and has a specific thing that they have to operate in. I do get your point in terms of power is spread out, so you do need to get some level of clearances from other people or other agencies or other influences in that government in order to make things happen. But at the end of the day, to my point is, yes, you can get both. And yes, you can be mad.
But at the same time.
At Tanzania. Yes, at the same time.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, like, what are you there for? Like, literally, like, what are you really there for?
It's an opportunity that you can't miss. And to kind of piggyback.
Wouldn't you be frustrated 5 years from now?
No, but listen. But in this article by the African Business Insider, they say right here, Africa is increasingly being used by new players as a terrain for a proxy war. Russia has entered the field and is likely to seek to expand its influence. The UN and other multilateral institutions will experience major disruption, which will weaken Africa's fragile gain on a multilateral front. And further, this actually in foreign policy circle in Moscow, they were calling this year the year of Africa, as they were looking to deepen their trade ties with Africa. But now that there are so many sanctions on them, obviously they're going to, you know, prioritize what's going on. Because as of reports have surfaced as of March 2nd, that the Russian-Ukraine war may have disrupted the completion of the steel project in Nigeria, which was worth $8 billion to the steel plant that has been subject to delays for over 40 years now. Wow. So now you can see why Nigeria was so skeptical and abstained from the votes. You know what I mean? Like, it's things of this nature that these governments have to think about. $8 billion, that's a lot.
Particular steel project in Nigeria, no, we're not gonna I'm going to put that on ice because there's some shady things happening with that.
Of course. But this is the positive that I'm talking about. And like I said before, they're being used for this proxy war that Amir even brought up earlier. So it's going to weaken us, because now, depending on what side we choose, or these African countries choose, they might be on a bad side with the West. They might go with the Russians. And China is there too, watching. And, you know, China is in Africa. They are in Africa. So, you know, it's like I said, it's multi-layered. And I get both of your points. You're both of you are not wrong. You know, Adama's, it's okay for Adama to be upset at Tanzania, and it's okay for Lord to see the positive in Tanzania. But we all have to understand that, and for our viewers to understand as well, that it is multi-layered. There's no right answer. You know, maybe five years from now, we're going to look at this move and be like, this was completely wrong. Or maybe 5 years from now, we're going to say Tanzania was the right move. We don't know.
Word. I just feel like even when I say, just really quick, just a thing, because I feel you can respond back. But even when you speak about Nigeria losing out on that opportunity, like, it's not like they have lost all of it. Because when we speak about, for example, how we saw that they're trying to partner up with Niger and Algeria and then just like expand the Trans-Saharan gas pipeline, that's something that they're able to do now because of the situation. That'll lead to more imports and exports of natural gases to the other European markets that are now open to that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, $8 billion come back, you know, full circle in whichever way that you're getting it next. So that's what I'm saying when I say things at the same time. Like, but you can't do that right now, but you can for do us to the say, other thing.
Because at the end of the day, let's be honest here. We are in the West.
Yes.
We're in America.
Yes.
We're seeing Russians as the bad guys. Russia is the bad guy to us. Let's be careful now.
They're not the bad guys.
Let me land before
the chess game that it is.
Let me land. Russia is the bad guy. Okay. To some of these African nations, Russia is not the bad guy.
Yeah.
So if you're of the perspective that Russia is not the bad guy, it's working with them while you are down, such a bad thing? That's a question that's raised. I'm not saying what's right. I'm not saying what's wrong. I'm just raising a question. It's food for thought.
We should take advantage of whatever the hell we can, because they would too. But yeah, go ahead, Lord.
All right, so a couple of things. So let me just clarify in terms of like means, not saying not mean in terms of Russia being the bad guy. In terms of brute force and literally an invasion of a country in that magnitude of that level hasn't happened like since the 20th century, like mm-hmm. literally, like overtly like that.
It's horrible.
So that right there, I am not for it 100%.
We pray for the Ukrainian people. I would like to say it again.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of like looking at it from a geopolitical perspective, in terms of like what has transpired, in terms of like when Ukraine tried to join NATO and Russia was not liking it and all that transpired, I get it, but I don't condone it.
Okay,
that's where I am on that. The second thing in terms of there was one point that Tampa made, and I'm trying to remember it, but it just slipped my mind. But that's what I wanted to go on. But even I'll get back to it. But the one thing which I will say that in terms of what the African nation is doing, African continent is doing. In any war situation that happens, there's always going to be some level of racism or xenophobia that's going to happen, regardless of who it is or not. In terms of, like, for example, the Syrian war and how Syrian refugees were being treated, it's more so of who do they think they could get away with that behavior? In terms of, for example, like, how people were mistreating the Syrian refugees, we did have an outcry on it, but it's like, if let's say they do it to actual in bringing it into context with Ukrainian people, that Poland or some other neighboring European countries did that to Ukrainian people, it would have been a worse PR look on them than it is on people our skin color. Because again, they don't consider us as Ukrainians or how do you call it, people of priority. But at the end of the day, we're still in that country though. At the end of the day, we're still trying to flee for safety. So it doesn't matter if we're Ukrainians or not. At the end of the day, we're still trying to seek asylum because we're in a place where actually our lives is in danger. We're trying to get out of there. But they think they could get away with it by doing it to us. But hello, like, come on now. Like, we out here. Like, we're black. Like, you're not just about to treat us unfairly and think that you could get away with it. Like, no. Or
I think that speaks to a lot of, I guess, how our people, prioritize. And when I speak about, you know, doing this, doing that, can you do that at the same time? Can you get what you need to get while demanding justice and all these different things? I think, like, because when I read, like, another country, Rwanda, also put out a statement saying that everyone is accounted for and that it is working on an evacuation plan for its citizens.
But did they get the people out?
They're working on an evacuation plan for the citizens.
Yeah, I really get it.
They're working on it.
That's what I'm saying. We're not behind the scenes, so don't get me wrong.
It's in the midst of war. Like, they're working on it.
Yeah, but the reason you think you can get away with it is because the people who are supposed to have your back aren't necessarily standing up and, you know, doing that. Because I think even when we speak about our star, the reason we're moving cautiously is because we don't want them to act a certain way that will make us move out of respect or out of diplomacy.
No, but even to your point, right, the African Union couldn't even put out as strong as a statement as they wanted.
What, saying we condemn your racism?
No. Not in terms of that, but I'm saying condemning Russian actions, right? Because of what's going on African what I'm getting at is that the continent is not united. You know, we can't all be behind this issue where we are against Russia, because like I was saying earlier, Russia has their hand in certain countries, and those countries need to be careful because their economy depends on it.
But right now, I feel like me and Lord are on the individual country. Like, I'm talking about Tanzania standing up for Tanzanians, Rwandans standing up for Rwandans.
Yeah, yeah, but wouldn't it be stronger if the continent was united and the African Union could come out with a strong statement?
For sure.
That's what I'm saying. That maybe could have maybe saved some of these countries for these blows they're taking from us today. You know, like, for example, I'm going to take an example on my country. We just signed a contract with the paramilitary group, well, allegedly, but the contract was signed. There's been multiple reports of it, and I believe it, and there's been Russian troops, Wagner troops on the ground, Russian paramilitary groups on the ground. Mm-hmm. Now, for a country of that nature that is going through war, going through terrorism, the French and them are not getting along, the French just left. How do you expect them to vote on the international stage against Russia when Russia is helping them, you know? And how do you expect them to fight or to back an African Union statement while Russia is behind them? You know, it's things of that nature that I think that should be highlighted as well when we're having these conversations to cover the whole, all of our bases.
Word. But I just feel like there's this fine line, because it's not like you're only dealing with the Russian side of it, right? Like, when we say, like, xenophobia, and we bring up those events that, like, it's not just one. Both groups are, per se, doing it.
Yeah, no, but I think that's a separate issue than the xenophobia. I think they should go in right away, in my opinion. They should go in right away, get our people back. Why not? We have planes.
Okay.
We have stuff, but like I said, we're going through. They have a lot. Governments have a lot to deal with. Right? It's a multi-layered issue.
Yeah, I feel you. I don't think it's possible to do everything at the same time, Lord.
And they are trying. That is all. That's my own little two cents on
it. I get your sense.
That's how I feel.
I get it. But my point is, there's a big difference between you speaking out against something and you making sure your people are safe. Me getting my people out of Ukraine doesn't mean that I have beef with Russia. I don't have a problem with you. I just want to make sure that my people are safe to get out of there.
Yeah.
So, again, I don't get what these African countries' governments are doing. Because, again, taking my people out of harm's way does not mean that I am necessarily against you.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that my people are safe. Because at the end of the day, it's not happening in Russia. It's happening in Ukraine. And I'm trying to get my people out. So, talking about and I get it. There are a lot of intricacies that goes on in terms of how to properly go about the evacuation process and everything. But goes to my point that I made before. If my own mother, with her limited resources, could get one person out, and you are a nation government, what are you doing? Yeah. I mean, yeah, you were late to the party, as Tomba said.
Always late. You know how we do.
Come on now.
And with that being said, for something like that to happen, which I think I agree with you, Lord, they should have been in there. They had to acknowledge that Russia was in the wrong. Like, you have to acknowledge those things, which in diplomacy matters to the Russian people, and that may have, you know, changed the landscape of how some of these deals were going. Like I said, we don't know all the way, but we can all agree that the war that is going on right now should not be happening. And we can also agree that it is affecting the African continent as much as it is affecting the rest of the world.
For sure.
And I think other than the Ukrainian people, it's affecting the African continent the most, in my opinion.
I agree.
And I believe that, you know, starting season two on this topic kind of highlights a lot of things that go on. And the world is becoming more and more globalized. And Africa is always getting the short end of the stick. And as we continue with the season, we're going to continue to highlight some of these current events that are going on, and also talk about, you know, the opportunities and, you know, the utopia-like decisions we can take as people, as countries, to hopefully one day live in this perfect Africa where Amir was saying earlier, our, you know, we don't have to leave our country in order to come study here and bring it back to our country. Now, how many of us are going to go back? We don't know. I'm planning. I want to go back, but we don't know how many people are going to go back, you know, yeah. Things of that nature. But hopefully one day, with these ideas that we're going to discuss, we can spark maybe spark one of our peers, or spark, you know, motivate ourselves to, you know, take a step forward towards this utopia that we want to build.
Mr. Amiri, any last thoughts?
Stop killing them on them.
I feel like we touched upon everything with the situation. We dive deep into how it's affecting us, how it's affecting the continent, and also the diaspora. But overall, yeah, like I say, just invest in ourselves and help us self-empower ourselves so we can better please our people.
For sure. You know, hopefully we can, you know, get some advantage on this multi-layered chess game that is the world we live in.
Yeah, great first episode, and we hope to see you guys for the second episode. Tune in.
Mm-hmm. Also, subscribe, follow. Mm-hmm. Share with your friends, your family members, your grandmoms, even though she don't got a phone or WhatsApp or whatever. Share with
we
her.
We love WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Shout out WhatsApp. You can always find us. Speaking of WhatsApp, you can find us on Apple, all streaming platforms. This is Africa Podcast or TIA Pod. On Instagram, we are TIA_Pod. On Facebook, we are This Is Africa Podcast. I think those are the.
Yeah, only don't two. Worry. We'll be coming to
Instagram,
you.
Instagram and Facebook are the ones we're using. We'll get our presence on Twitter.
We'll be coming to you.
Pick them one by one. Make me bust my gun. Poison us like a long python. Gunfire in 911 dying. We never like the sound of them sirens. They only respect them.